So if we pick up where we had left off, this would be Mizmor Lyrics, Psalm 91:8. It reads, "You will merely observe and study." The merely there is not a pejorative term. It's not a demeaning term. It's a, you know, you're so stupid. All you can do is study. I mean, you're never going to get your nose out of the library. No, it's merely in the sense of that my exposure to Islam. And now I'm conveying the 91st Psalm from my personal perspective. I'm absolutely convinced that the 91st Psalm was written to all of the covenant's children, that anyone in the covenant that chooses to engage in what God wants done, which is to share the truth, something that's very unpopular, and to expose and condemn lies, something else that's very unpopular, because you have to be in opposition to your government, to patriotism, to the military, to political parties, and to all religions. That if you're willing to do what God wants to do, if you're willing to take the same stand that he takes in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, then you need protection. Because you'd be one voice crying out in a wilderness surrounded by M1 Abrams tanks and A-10 attack aircraft and Apache gunships and all manner of weapons, with everybody pointed them at you. I mean, the only chance you would have is that they're so zealous in shooting you and they're surrounding you that they all blow each other up. But you need protection. So I think it's to anyone who is willing to do that role. And you might say, oh, boy, why would you want to do that? Why would you want the whole world to turn against you? Best job you could possibly have. It's a great job. And Yahweh does a marvelous job of protecting those that engage in it. So when this says you will merely observe and study, that means that God likes to work through people. Yeah, that your part is to be observant and to study the foe, whether it be like you did with government, showing that that Woodrow Wilson deliberately perpetrated what's called the Spanish flu and is responsible for the deaths of 100 million people. And that it's our job to expose and condemn government and religion. But in doing it, what God wants us to do is he doesn't want us to pick up a weapon and go off and engage and shoot them. He doesn't want us even to have to go away someplace to confront them in person. What he wants us to do is to study, to take the time to be prepared, to learn the truth. You can't be an advocate for the truth or an advocate against that which is a lie unless you're willing to invest the time to observe and to think about what you have seen. So merely here means that's our job. We aren't going to pick up a gun and go blasting people. We're going to blast them with our words. So you're merely going to observe and study. You will only look at and evaluate. You will exclusively gaze upon and consider. You will look at and think about the proper response. This was written in the Hiphil, Imperfect Active. This means that God would help, in the case of taking it personally, me see and then facilitate my evaluation of what I witnessed on an ongoing basis with unfolding results so long as I actively engaged in the process. So you will merely observe and study with your eyes the consequence and the suffering of the guilty and wicked. So in whether it be the first phase, which was to expose and condemn Islam, or the second phase, which was to expose and condemn Judaism by revealing what the Torah actually says, or the third phase, which was to expose and condemn Pauline Christianity, that our role, my role in that, was simply going to be to look at what God said, look at what these adversarial institutions wrote with my eyes, that I wouldn't have to endure their suffering. I would not have to go to Syria to be able to expose the cause of Islamic terrorism. I would not have to go to the Vatican to expose and condemn the flaws of
terrible behavior,
Christianity. And that the consequence of their suffering was something that I would witness, but only with my eyes. That's a marvelous thing. It says you're going to engage in this battle. Yeah, but you're going to engage with your eyes and with your mind and with your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, you're not going to be afflicted by them. You're not going to be harmed by them. The consequence of their suffering is not something you're going to endure. That's what you'd want a father to be. You know, for example, I want my children to be informed so that they know, for example, that the Roman Catholic Church has been a, if not the worst, one of the worst institutions in all of human history. And I want them to know that they ought not trust their government, that a military is a counterproductive institution, not a positive one. I want them to examine history and to examine news and think about it so that they can form those conclusions. I don't want them to join the military to understand that the military is corrupt. You know, I don't want them to join the Roman Catholic Church to understand that the Roman Catholic Church is corrupt. I don't want them to go to Syria to appreciate that Islam is corrupt. Do it with your eyes, with your mind. And God will protect you from its consequence. So that's a positive way to communicate what we're going to be doing. It's exactly what
we do here.
What happened with me. I mean, what I did to create Prophet of Doom is I took the two chronological, if you will call historical, collections of hadith. Now, everything in Islam is hadith. The Quran itself is hadith. Hadith means oral report. It's an oral report from Muhammad, passed by hearsay, ear to mouth to ear, over the course of anywhere from 100 years to 200 years, strictly by verbal repetition of the old game of telephone as a kid. And so 100% of what we have in Islam, the Quran and Hadith are all, the Quran and Hadith are all Hadith. That's how they were retained. That's how they were communicated. That's how they were retained. Written Arabic didn't even exist at the time that the Quran was allegedly revealed. So I took the two chronological collections of Hadith. One is by Ibn Ishaq. It's called the Sirah, the biography. The other one is called the Tariq, which is the history of Islam. One was compiled by Ishaq, the other one compiled by Tabari. They have enormous, enormous commonality between the two of them. So I used those two chronological accounts to know everything that was knowable about Muhammad's life. What he did when he did it. What he said when he said it. And then knowing that, it became fairly easy to reorder the Quran chronologically. And the Quran is an absolute jumbled mess. It has no context. It has no chronology. It's as if a tornado picked up isolated statements and just threw them together haphazardly. And without context and without chronology, it's impossible to understand any message. I mean, the number one rule that I have for translating Yahweh's testimony is I will never, ever translate anything out of context. Somebody says, can you give me a translation on Isaiah 17:2? No. No, I'm happy to, if time permits, to translate all of Yahshua 17, but I'm not going to give you a statement out of context. You have to understand the context. I began my overall presentation of Yahshua by saying, here's the context. Here's the context of the prophets. Here's the context of the Northern Kingdom. Here's the context of Yehuda. Here's the context of the kings of these places. Here's the context of the nations that were vying for power around them. If you don't understand the context, you can't understand the message. And so I took these two hadith sources, the Tariq and the Sirah, and one of which was the oldest book in Islam's history. It was compiled about 125 years after Muhammad's death, and the other within 200 years. And I used them to reorder the Quran in chronological order and set the Quran's word into the context of Muhammad's life. And when you do that, using your eyes, using your brain, all of a sudden Islam is laid out naked and bare, transparent in Hillary Clinton's words. It's obvious that Muhammad was a sexual pervert and a mass-murdering, ruthless, conniving terrorist, that he created Islam as a criminal enterprise to enrich himself. And that his God was modeled after Satan. that it just becomes obvious. There's no denying it. It's irrefutable. Everything makes sense when you do those things. Now, that's how the book was written. It was written exactly as God said that we would do it together. And, you know, read Prophet of Doom. It is exactly as I have described it.
Yeah.
Because you, Yahweh, have invoked certainty. Appointing and placing by invitation, making available the sheltered sanctuary of the Almighty, your place to dwell together. Psalm 91, 9. That's the thing I like about, I mean, there's a lot of things I like about God. Yeah, a whole lot of things. And he's just an extraordinary, appealing individual. But one of the things I really like about him is absolute certainty. I hated faith. Oh, man, you're constantly told how terrible doubt is. You got all these people who are just complete hypocrites and are trying to pretend that their faith is greater than everybody else's faith. And there was never any basis for faith, but you were told that you just had to believe and that doubt was the enemy creeping into your mind. And oh, my God, it was. And you were just trying to always impress somebody else that you really believed that you didn't have any doubts. I was so uncomfortable. And finally, to meet God, he says, listen, I got no use for belief. I got no use for faith. I want you to know for certain. And I'm going to give you so much information in such a way that you will know for certain who I am, that I authored the text that you're reading, and that you can trust me. You can know for certain. Because you, Yahweh, have invoked certainty.
Now, why does that not appeal to the Christian community?
Because
when you present it, they just freak out because you've actually challenged their faith and they're scared to death, I guess.
Because they're told that doubt is the epitome of faithlessness, which will send a person directly to hell. So when somebody challenges their faith, it becomes so frightening to them that they repel those words, and they have all been conditioned. This is the thing that was most helpful in understanding Islam. Satan plays a significant role in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd say, well, how can Allah be modeled after Satan if, in fact, Islam warns against Satan and constantly says that anyone who challenges Muhammad's message is leaguing with Satan? How can that be? How can Paul have spoken for Satan, have been demon-possessed, and yet speak out against Satan? Well, the answer is really simple, really obvious, and that is that Satan, HaSatan, the adversary, the Lord, does not want to be worshipped or known as the adversary. He wants to be known and worshipped as God.
And he is a straw man too.
Right, so he wants the whole notion of Satan to be considered bad because he wants to be positioned as God. Right, and so what the Christian has done is created this myth that if you criticize Paul, that you're being satanic. And so they dismiss the person who criticizes Paul, even if they're criticizing Paul with God's own words, as being satanic. So religion is wholly and completely irrational. Religion is a faith, and faith is the inverse of reason. You know, all the debates and philosophy through the years, it was always between faith and reason.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're advocating reason, and God, you know, I would just translate the last passage I translated in Yeshaya was, God says, come, let's walk together and have a discussion where we reason together.
Well,
you know, God wants us to reason together. His communication to us is rational. He wants us to be rational. And he wants to spend eternity walking with us and talking with us, but not about, you know, his idea of talking with us, though, is not for us to enumerate our want list. You know, I want to get a base hit. I want to score a touchdown. I want to date with the pretty girl. I want to win the lottery. I want to do well on the next test. I want to get a better job. You know, no, that's not his idea of quality time. His idea of quality time is having a rational discussion while walking through his universe together.
Oh, he's not afraid of questions.
No, not at all. But the religious are. The Quran says he who questions will lose their faith. It says those who questioned the Quran lost their faith, and as such they became apostates.
Well, in case of that, that's absolutely true in Paul as well.
Yes.
If you ask questions and get the answers, you walk away.
That is correct. So that is why the faithful, religious individuals are in opposition to evidence and reason. Evidence and reason, if there were evidence to prove their religion, they wouldn't need faith. So it's an absence of evidence that they choose faith. And then faith doesn't exist where proof exists to denounce that, those beliefs. And so they will not consider proofs that repudiate their beliefs. So it's an isolating and indoctrinating circle. Faith leads to belief, which rejects evidence and reason. If there is no evidence and reason, one has to believe. If one believes, they're in opposition to evidence and reason, which denounces their faith.
It's a deadly circle, ain't it?
It's a deadly circle, and there's no way out of it. That's why God says several times, I cannot comprehend the religious. I can't endure the religious. I can't save the religious.
Isn't that profound?
Wow. And he says it over and over again. So I'm convinced that he means it.
Oh yeah.
So because you, Yahweh, have invoked certainty, appointing and placing by invitation and making available the sheltered sanctuary, appointing by invitation. What do you think he means by that? The sheltered sanctuary. Yeah, absolutely. The Moed Mikrae are invitations to meet with God. God has invited us to be called out of this world and to meet with him. That is what kara, the verb that serves as the heart of Mikrae, means, is to invite. So he has appointed, the Moed, I have appointed meetings that you are invited, Mikra, to attend, that lead to, make available, the sheltered sanctuary. They lead us from the doorway of life, Pesach, across the welcome mat that perfects us, Matzah, to become adopted into Yah's family, Bukurim, to be enriched and empowered as children of God on Shabuah, so that we can do what we're doing now, be his troubadours on Teruah, helping to reconcile Yahweh and his chosen people, so that we can all Sukkah camp out together, and that's Kippurim leading to Sukkah, camp out together in his sheltered sanctuary. That's where the invitations lead. So it is the sheltered sanctuary of the Almighty, his place, your place, to dwell together. So, you know, when you're going to go off and use your words to quarrel with government and military thinking, militaristic thinking, and religion, you know, A, that you have complete confidence that you can trust everything that God has promised. But the most important thing you know you can trust is that he has invited all of his children to live with him in his home forever. And there's nothing that provides greater confidence than that. You are risking nothing to when you're exposing and condemning the things that God's opposed to, so long as you're doing so as a member of his covenant family. Because the worst they can do is take your life, which is already guaranteed to be immortal.
Biggie.
Yeah, it's a big, it's a wonderful confirmation. Then in 91:11, this is because his spiritual envoys and agents, his malach, he will instruct and direct Shawah concerning you and to approach you, to actually keep watch over you and genuinely guard you in all of your ways. Now, there's a couple of interesting things here. First, the Malach, command and control regimen, their implements, their Yahweh's tools. They're spiritual tools, which means they're immortal. They're spiritual tools, which means they look like light. They are, but they're tools. The Moloch have no free will. They do what they're told. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, if I'm going to be a hammer, I'd like to be a hammer in the hands of God. It's a good gig. You're immortal, and you get to work with the finest individual in all of creation. You're a creator, man. He created you too.
Yeah.
And so these spiritual envoys, Yahweh talks about how he uses them. And one of the ways he says he's going to use them is he's specifically going to have them protect those, guard, watch over those who are engaged doing what God wants done, particularly when they're doing something that causes them to be threatened or harassed by others. Now, that's powerful in by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, he says that he will instruct and direct them.
Yeah. You know what I dug up on that one is direct or calls to turn or instructions for the path to take. You know, just keep you on the path. I mean, that's right. The oldest thing I could find.
Yeah, and it means to order and to decree, to appoint and to command, even assign. With the peel stem, the object receives the effect of the decree, while in the imperfect, the assignment is an ongoing affair, and in the active voice, the subject acts while the object benefits. Well, we are the object. The subject is acting. It's Yahweh's Moloch. And so he's telling his Moloch what to do.
Yeah.
Now, he is providing it. He didn't use, I'm not commanding them. He is telling them what to do. You don't have to command. You don't have to issue an order. He's just telling them, this is what I want you to do. So do it. It's like if I hold a hammer in my hand and I swing my hand down, the hammer doesn't say, no. That was not a properly conveyed instruction. I just said, okay, I know what you want to do. I'm going to do it. And, even in Yahshayah, it begins by saying, listen, heaven, because Yahweh has spoken. Well, even in heaven, in the spiritual realm, the Moloch need to know what God has to say so they can carry out his instructions. What was the fellow's name now? I've had a senior moment, but the fellow that found the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, now you gave me the disease.
Oh, okay, well, it doesn't matter the individual's name. But anyway, when he found the Ark of the Covenant, went into the room in what is Yirmiyah's grotto, directly beneath the place where Passover was fulfilled by Yosha, and he found the receptacle of where Ron White was his name, where the upright pole was placed and the crack in the earth that caused the earthquake, and where the blood of the Passover lamb dripped on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant directly below it. And the Moloch had the room all cleaned up and organized for him. And looking at the Ark of the Covenant and the 10 tablets of stone, the Moloch, when Ron said, can I take these out and photograph them? Can I photograph them here? What can I do? And, the Moloch said, no. I'm here to watch these things. You can look at them. You're more than welcome to look at them. But, I'm here because my next official act is that I'm going to hold these up when the Sunday law is invoked, which means when Christianity is invoked,
mm-hmm.
The Sunday law. So the Torahless one is going to invoke Christianity and mandate it, and that's when this Moloch says, I have been instructed to hold up these tablets. That's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew the game plan.
Yeah.
He knew the timing. He knew the reason. He knew the game plan. He understood what needed to be done. Yahweh is instructing and directing his Moloch.
That would imply that they are watching him all the time and listening all the time, and they know pretty much all the game plan, don't they?
Oh, they know the game plan. Absolutely.
I mean, there was no reason to doubt that they were doing. Well, some people say they don't know this. I can't imagine why they've been there forever.
Oh, yeah, it's because of the passage that says not even the angels in the heaven know the day and the time.
Yeah,
that's how. That's
know.
How. Yeah, of course they know. Yeah, they're eternal beings. They have direct access to Yahweh. Of course they know. Mm-hmm. It's a that's complete and utter creation of something that was not actually said. So this is because his spiritual envoys and agents, his Moloch, he will instruct and direct concerning you to actually keep watch over you and genuinely guard you. This is interesting. This is Shamar.
Shamar, the one.
Shamar, from our perspective, when Yahweh asks us to Shamar Torah, for example, that means he wants us to closely examine and carefully consider.
Right.
Well, so he's telling his Moloch, I want you to closely examine and carefully consider. And Shamar also means to guard, to care for, to protect. You know, like a watchman, he keeps his eyes open and focused. Yeah, the guard for the sheep, to protect the sheep. So Shamar conveys also this idea of guarding and protecting and caring about, watching over in a protective way.
Keep safe, right?
Right. So God is not a micromanager. He very, very seldom infringes on free will, even when people make horrendous decisions. I mean, for example, for God to say, I'm going to protect a 2-year-old child from getting run over by the car by changing the life of the driver of that car, by changing the life of the guy that served the driver of that car drinks, by changing the life of the guy that founded the company that made the alcohol that was poured into the glass. By the bartender, the person, and then I'm going to change the life of the person that manufactured the car that could be there. You know, God doesn't micromanage like that.
No, then it's over.
Yeah, it's over. I mean, it's just the whole thing is a charade. He does not do
that. Then he can't do that.
But he does engage in human affairs, and he has made a promise to protect his children when his children are engaged in his business, and so he can. Without making a ruse of free will, if somebody were to say, you know, I just don't like artists, and that Captain Kirk, I do not like his art.
Instead,
I am going to snuff him out. While Yahweh is not going to intervene and preclude them being an art critic, nor is he going to intervene and cause them to be a better art critic. But he is going to preclude them from being successful in picking up a implement of mass infliction to hurt you.
Yeah.
So there you go.
That's good for me. That's my idea with it.
Now, Yahweh is not going to keep the rain from falling on your head.
No.
He is not going to keep the mosquito from biting you. He's not going to keep you and your wife from occasionally scuffling over some issue. He's not going to do that. He's not going to intervene in every aspect of your life. But he is going to help you when you seek to learn, and he is going to protect you when somebody has decided they want to harm you because of the stand that you have taken on behalf of Yahweh.
Then he intervened.
Right, then he intervenes. You know, if I were to go out today and decide to drive my car 100 miles an hour off a cliff, he's not going to intervene.
No.
Now, if I go out today and go to get my mail, and there's a Muslim that knows that I'm here and would like to drive his car 100 miles an hour to do me in,
he'll miss.
He's going to stop that. Yeah. So that is what's being said here. Now, what's interesting, he says, to guard you in all of your travels, in all of your ways. So in this particular case, this is what's kind of interesting. After I accepted this mission from Yahweh, I was in my plane. It was a Pilatus at the time, which Pilatus is a wonderful airplane, but it has some peculiar characteristics. One of the peculiar characteristics is that if you stall it, you're dead. And so it has a pusher shover on it that engages automatically if you approach stall to push the nose over to keep the airplane from stalling. Because if you stall it, you can't recover. You know, and in training aircraft, you can stall them. We practice stalls. We practice recovering from stalls. And a Pilatus, you can't do it. And a Pilatus, it is prohibited for you to do a roll or a loop in a Pilatus because you can't survive it. And so I was over the Pentagon. Wake Vortex put me upside down.
Finish the story.
And in doing so, what I found was that that airplane was righted. Now, was I at that moment about Yahweh's business? No. But I had devoted my life to being about his business.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was
more work to do.
In all of my ways and travels, he kept me alive.
And that's what Derek means.
Yeah, exactly what Derek means. And the reason was is because I had devoted myself to this mission.
Wow.
So I want to thank you for listening today. We'll be back this evening on the Bot Show. Thank you, Scott, for being with us. And, Kirk, I will speak with you in a few hours.
Look forward to it.
Bye.